Hello, everybody. This is Doc Flux. I sound very excited right now. Why is that? Well, this is the first episode of a show that I'm doing with a little compatriot that I had in my previous show, Vita Comics. With me is, and I can't believe I get to call him this now, Dr. Father... I'm sorry, we're getting rid of the father. We escaped the cult. Dr. Robert D'Angelo Shepherd, MD.
D'Angelo, I like it. All right, that's me. That's me.
That is what the D stands for, isn't it?
From now on, it does. Don't tell my grandmother.
D'Angelo. That's very Scottish. Very
yeah,
Scottish.
It's obviously very, very Scottish. It's yeah, just it's the most just Scottish like haggis name. And Ewan McGregor, D'Angelo.
Listen, people who have listened to our previous show, Feed It Comics, before I moved to the Mr. Television Face Network, know us. They know me, Doc Flux, and of course, previously known as Father Shepherd, now Dr. Robert D'Angelo Shepherd, MD. And both of us are doing this show called The Doc and Shepherd Show.
That's pretty awesome.
And this is airing exclusively on the Mr. Television Face podcast network dash site. It's the site. Come on. MrTVFace.com. Lots of good stuff happening this year for that. I'm going to be. All right. So everyone's wondering. They're like, Doc, weren't you doing this like game show thing, the Mr. TV Face show? I mean, it was pretty cool, but you did like two episodes and then you just left us for like two straight months.
Yeah, what's up, bro?
Listen, I mean, first of all, I apologize. But second of all, it didn't go anywhere. There's going to be more. But I wanted to do some other shows in the interim because it's hard to get those shows, to get people together for those shows, get contestants, get everybody arranged, get all the samples lined up for all the questions. I mean, it is a game show and a one-man show, or at least as far as me doing all the production. So I'm going to try and streamline that, but I'm also doing a ton of other projects and trying to get MrTVFace.com online with some regular content. So this is my year. 2016 is the year that I make it happen, but I'm super happy to have my good friend Robert Shepherd. And from now on, we're just going to refer to you as Shepherd.
Yeah, that's good.
And you're going to have to get used to it.
That's good. I can deal with it. I've got 6 months of my life in which I get to do this on the reg, and then we get to figure out how else I'm going to do it. But we'll figure it out.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, now there's, you know, a handful of shows that I can throw up here. And whenever my good friend here is available, we can do a show and we can talk about any subjects we want. Subjects, plural. We have one particular subject this show that we're going to talk about. May seem kind of random because, you know, for your first show, what do you choose to talk about? It could be anything. I mean, 2015 was an incredible year for comics, video yeah. games, television shows, movies. My God, it was jam-packed with just, you know, media and pop culture. And you know, I mean, I hate to say it, politics.
Let's not bring that in there. Let's not do it. Let's not do it right now.
Try not to sully this with politics. But I will say this. One of our correspondents for Mr. TV Face is Dirk Jerkley. And he happens to be a conservative pundit. So tune in to listen to that guy as Dirk. Much as you can stand him. But in any case, don't worry. It's satire, Shepherd. It's satire.
No, I know. I like Dirk. Personally, he's yeah. okay.
and hopefully we can get some of those characters on this show to talk one of these days. But right now I just want to chill. Netflix and chill. What? Who? Netflix and chill?
Not with me, surely.
I hear that. I hear that phrase a lot. Both of us watched Marvel's latest Netflix show, Jessica Jones.
Yes.
And so we decided we were going to talk about that. And both of us, at least to some extent, had read the Alias comic. I'm still actually in the middle of it.
I went back and reread it. Actually, I reread it after the show ended just to see, and I reread most of The Pulse, which is the series that came after it.
I don't know where you find the time to read this stuff. But
on the toilet, mostly.
Alright, so do me a favor. Don't spoil anything in the books for me. Okay. We'll talk about the show. But one thing I discovered is that I kind of like reading the books or the source material of something after seeing the movies. A lot of people, most people, they read something and then they'll see the movie. And then, you know, there'll be some measure of disappointment. Because reading is typically the deeper experience for the most part. 90% of the time, it's just a more intimate, deeper experience.
For this show, it's different, though. I feel like they added a lot more subtext and a lot more gritty detail that the comic didn't really do in its day. The beauty of this show is Brian Michael Bendis, the creator of Alias and now big name writer, had this project in mind before he even started writing Alias, apparently. He wanted to make it into a TV show, and then it just so happened he couldn't get made, so it became part of the first round of Max comics. Do you remember the adult comics that Marvel was publishing
back in the early? Of course, I'm reading them right now. The Omnibus, anyway.
But initially it was meant to be a TV show, which I think is pretty fascinating.
I think the structure of the book, and just Jessica as a character, definitely... I'm reading this and I'm like, oh, well, yeah, this is a really great character. I could totally see an executive being inspired to turn this into a show. Jessica Jones was never actually part of the Defenders. So it was it was kind of a conscious decision to do something with that character, even though she wasn't technically connected to these other characters. I mean, she is. Well, she's connected to Luke Cage, and maybe that's the connection.
Yeah,
maybe that's the thing where they're like, oh, well, let's use... Because, I mean, otherwise, you know, Doctor Strange, who's typically in the Defenders, he's getting his own movie. And by the way, Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange. Let's just take a moment. We've seen the pictures.
The mustache.
Wow. They even gave him... I mean, so they Silver Foxed him up big time. And they gave him, like, the layered hair, you know? Like, the wispy, kind of longer hair.
Yeah.
He looks great. I didn't expect it to look that spot on.
And well, Marvel's doing really good things, especially its B-list characters. And you can argue that Doctor Strange is a pretty B-list character for Marvel, you know? The Spider-Man, the X-Men, Iron Man now, thanks to the movie, but really before Iron Man movie...
Well, B-list is not that bad of a term when you're talking about Marvel characters because there's so many CD and E-lists. and some of those even have like fan base.
I still like D-Man. Do you like D-Man?
D-Man's no, my favorite. Nobody likes D-Man. Was D-Man, did that mean Demolition Man?
I think so.
Or am I remembering that improperly?
I think he was Demolition Man. He had a like lame Wolverine / Daredevil costume, and he eventually became a hobo. I'm not kidding you. He did. He was a hobo. And
which writer turned him into a hobo?
I think it was Kurt Busiek in the Avengers. You remember when Avengers number one came out back in the mid 90s after Heroes Reborn?
I was in the mid 90s. In the 90s, I was almost 100% purely X-Men and Image Comics.
Huh. You didn't read.
I read Spider-Man and some Silver Surfer, and of course I dipped into some other things here and there. I was into other stuff, you know, Ghost Rider, whatever. But I was also into a lot of the Image stuff. When the Image stuff came, I was like kind of like, you know, abandoning Marvel a bit and go. Well, a lot of people did that. A lot of people kind of just said, "Oh, well, all the great artists are over here now."
And Rob Liefeld.
And I was one of the few people I knew that was also, as a kid anyway, reading the Valiant stuff.
Because it
was mostly adults that were reading the Valiant stuff because adults could get over the fact that the art was most of the time not as intense and impressionable as what Marvel and Image was doing. So
yeah, you're right.
But anyway, we totally got off track here. Let's rein it back in. So we had the Max Comics, of course, Alias, Jessica Jones. Now we have the show, Netflix, putting the Defenders together. Daredevil Season 2 about to come up. We both really love Daredevil. Mm-hmm. We talked about that on our previous show. So Jessica Jones, we both love this show. We can state this.
Yeah,
right
we
off
can
the
say
bat.
That. I thought it was better than Daredevil, honestly. I liked it a lot.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's As much as it pains me to maybe say that, and that says a lot, because Daredevil is really,
oh, it's fantastic,
really good.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the quality of these shows is amazing. But let's do this. Let's just go. We'll start off by talking about each character. And then we'll talk about the role they play and how we like them or whatever. So let's talk about Kristen Ritter. She's Jessica Jones, and for people who don't know, she's a former superhero. In this show, they kind of hint that they actually give you a little bit of backstory about how she tried to be a hero, but it's not as like in the comics, she was actually part of a sub Avengers group or something. She had, her name was Jewel. She had a crazy costume or whatever. In the show, they kind of make a subtle nod to that. But really, the only heroic thing she did was in a sandwich costume.
Ironically.
Which is really funny, and I like, you know, the story behind that, as far as like the idea where they actually shopped around for different kinds of sandwich outfits to put Kristen Ritter in. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. She's a PI because she just doesn't want to be, you know, a hero or whatever. But in she's suffering kind of a post-traumatic stress disorder. And this is because of an experience she had with Kilgrave, the villain, and we'll talk about him in a bit. So she works at Alias Investigations, and so one thing I noticed is her attitude is pretty close to the books. I would say that in the book she's a little bit more, she has a little bit more humanity on her sleeve in the books than she does in the show, because she's got a lot more rough edges. But Kristen Ritter plays this character great. Like, this is an iconic role for her. She's not going anywhere after this. What did you think?
Well, now I have to compare it to the source material, but really I thought the show was brilliantly done. I thought it was better done, actually, than the comics, because the comics has her, they explain a little bit more about why she became a superhero, and her little encounter with the Avengers, which ended up with her getting the shit beaten out of her by the Avengers, which is strange. I like the fact that she's a very realistic kind of superhero. She can fly, but she can't really land. She's strong, but not really that strong. She's got strong skin, but it's not really quite that strong.
I think even more, like, to the point is the fact that, like, you know, she has varying, she can't really control her powers that much, and it seems like there's various degrees of strength and whatever other ability that she just, maybe she doesn't have the confidence in herself to do it. It's kind of like a Spider-Man 2 thing where he's like, I am Spider-Man no more. And it's a psychological thing where, you know,
she was very, very well rounded. I think the character had a lot of depth, especially with the whole Kilgrave background, which you slowly figure out, you know, it's very gradual throughout the series, exactly what happened to her. It's a character that, from the get-go, has an incredible amount of depth, which I thought was brilliantly done by Marvel. They didn't focus so much on the superheroics, they focused on the character, and that's what I like.
Which they extended to Luke Cage, and you know, he's played by Mike Coulter. This guy's awesome. He has the presence. I mean, he just has great screen presence. And he's pretty intense. You know, obviously Luke Cage, unbreakable skin, so there's some funny, cool stuff that happens later on, you know, regarding that. So Jessica Jones is following him around and taking pictures, and then we learn that there's like a history there, which is a really I think we can be spoilery here. I mean, people have seen the show. If you haven't seen the show, don't listen to this. If you have, listen forth. It turns out that, you know, she feels guilty, and she's just checking in on him because she killed his wife under the influence of Kilgrave. But I love how their relationship develops. It's really complex. And it just, you know, the whole time I was watching this, them kind of, you know, just develop, it made me more excited about what the Defenders is going to be like, because when the Defenders are together, everyone's going to have kind of a history, and it's fascinating to think, and we will have lived through their history, you know, like especially these two couple characters. It's going to be interesting to see how Danny Rand plays into all this, because he's supposed to become Luke Cage's like best friend. So are they gonna like, you know, set up? I'm interested to see how they set up their friendship.
She's already been kind of set up, because you've got in Daredevil, you've got the whole hand attacking Daredevil at one point, and the Crane Mother, who's a character in Daredevil, she's a Chinese lady, and Jessica Jones's lawyer or her lawyer friend, played right. by Carrie Ann Moss. Mm-hmm. has a direct connection with Danny Rand, eventually.
Oh, okay, okay.
So they're setting it up pretty nicely. They're setting it up very gradually, but I like it.
And we will get to, we'll definitely get to Carrie Ann Moss. I think it's Hogarth. But let's, so, I mean, Luke Cage, he rocked, and I love how he kind of disappeared for a while in the show after there was some serious issues between him and Jessica, but for good reason. And, you know, you didn't know whether or not he was going to come back, but when he did, it just fit into the story so well, and then, of course, it just pumped you up for some more Luke Cage, which we're getting pretty soon.
Yeah.
Everything tied together so well. Now, so one of the big changes from the books, and this is the next character, Patricia Trish Walker, that's right, Patsy, who would eventually become Hellcat, although no mention of that yet, except that there's a few she's training to fight. So there's
she really likes taking those steroid pills that they give you.
right. But I don't know if she's going to want to get hooked on anything like that, because she would be an unhinged hero, and Hellcat isn't exactly that. But in the show, okay, she's taking the place of Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. Yep. Who at the time wasn't Captain Marvel, I don't believe. She was Miss Marvel at the time.
Yeah, she was Miss Marvel. She was a recovering alcoholic at that point.
She was the friend of Jessica's that they had a falling out, and Jessica has to go back and try to pave things over, and then they end up kind of helping each other or whatever. But they decided, because obviously Captain Marvel's getting her own movie, they replaced her with Trish Walker. I think this is great. Because the backstory they gave her as a former model and child star definitely added a little depth to her character, and also Jessica's, because they grew up together. They're taking a lot of liberties here.
I think it worked fine. I do not mind it at all.
No, because I mean, you got to see some really, I mean, the mother, and there's a lot of despicable characters in this show, and the mother is. No exception. And you can see kind of like the whole dynamic, the whole power dynamic and the psychology. Everything makes sense as far as like the way that these characters turned out. But I love Trish Walker in this. I mean, she's a very supportive, strong friend. She makes kind of a couple bad decisions here and there, but I mean, she really wants to help. She really wants to be a hero. I think they're setting her up to be Hellcat in some way. It'll be interesting to see that. I don't know if she's going to be an official kind of member of the Defenders or where they're going to go with her. But you know, Rachel Taylor is a great member of the cast. I'm sure they're going to keep her around for a while.
Oh no, it was very interesting the way they set her up and her relationship with the next character, Frank Simpson, the policeman.
Right.
Who the setting up? They already set him up to be Nuke, who will be prominent. I'm assuming Daredevil season 3. That's the only way he can be prominent, really, because he's a character that showed up initially in the comics in Frank Miller's Daredevil Born Again. Do you remember that?
Yes, I mean I read that so long ago, but
they took some lines of dialogue straight from the Frank Miller comic when he's.
So in the is it the same? I mean, is he taking like pharmaceuticals or whatever that give him that strength? Is that like his thing?
Yeah, he takes red, white, and blue pills.
Right, that's right.
And he's part of the Super Soldier program, which leads to Captain America, and then later on Wolverine, etc.
You know, what is it with Marvel and characters that get their powers from pills?
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely changed that with Ant-Man, and that was a good idea. Because it would have been funny to see Paul Rudd popping pills every 5 seconds. I don't know about... So this character, he's kind of the character... I mean, he Will Travel plays him in this kind of, like... He always seems like he's very, like, you know... slimy and sleazy and kind of in a way that it's like you know that he's up to something, but even when he's being a kind of a nice guy, And I wonder if he is that way on purpose, because, you know, he does end up becoming a villain.
I mean, well, I guess he's obviously got some baggage. I feel like they're going to tie that eventually to Captain America, and the Super Soldier program, and how he's maybe a very emotionally scarred person, which makes it very interesting, because in the show you've got four deeply scarred people. You've got Jessica Jones, you've got Simpson, you've got Luke Cage, and you've got Kilgrave. All four of them are completely messed up, and in a way Trish Walker too, because of her mum. So you've got these five characters who are the main characters of the show who are each messed up in such horrendous ways.
Everyone is messed up in this. Everyone. We're gonna get to Hope, the character Hope. Holy shit, what a tragic emotional slog of an arc for her, being the victim that, you know, Jessica Jones basically, she saved her and thought that she had done good and saved her or whatever, but Kilgrave, who had her under her control, and by the way, this is just as a student, she was an athlete, and she obviously just caught Kilgrave's notice, and that was that. Was also part of, like, Kilgrave would talk to her about Jessica and basically every one of his victims. So the end game was to get to Jessica, and he set the whole thing up for Hope to go down this downward spiral, which, you know, spoiler alert, she kills her own parents after she's freed by Jessica. And that's a really brutal scene. It's a very intense scene.
That's what hooked me onto the show, because it was the very ending of the first episode, wasn't that, when that happened? And it's just so horrifying.
It wasn't the first. I mean, it was the first. It was the two or three, maybe.
Was it really?
Well, it couldn't have been the first, because she was on the trail for a little bit
before
she found Hope. But okay, so they pepper Kilgrave in, and we're getting to him. As far as Will Simpson, Nuke, you know, they set him up well as a villain. Although I'm not sure how much I like how much of his character was in the show, and some of the scenes with him just felt a little awkward and off to me. Maybe I have to watch it again. Wasn't the biggest fan of that character, but it didn't ruin anything for me.
It felt like more of a setup character rather than one that was meant to be significant to the show. But he did do things that changed the course of the show, so let's see where it goes. It seems like the show was more involved with two characters, really, which is Jessica and Kilgrave.
Right. And I'm about to get... So, just to give these other characters their due, Malcolm is an important character.
Oh, fantastic. And very brilliantly done.
Really. Also really screwed up, and obviously because of Kilgrave.
Very different from the comics, too, which I liked.
Right. And I don't know too much about that character yet, as far as the comics are concerned, but Eka Daraville plays him, this great actor out of the blue. I think he's fairly new.
Yeah.
And I like that he's taking over the kind of, like, you know, I don't want to say sidekick, but at least like assistant to Jessica Jones, even though he doesn't really like that position. And he has to do some pretty messed up stuff in this show. He goes from, like, you know, just a drug addict. For a while, I was totally convinced he was just this drug addict. And then at some point they reveal that Kilgrave's the one that got him on these drugs, and it's like, wow, man. It's like they just keep, every single episode, there's just another reason to just deeply hate Kilgrave before he even turns up. Really, I mean, you get to see him.
He doesn't really show up for a while, doesn't he?
Very, like, just, you know, a handful of very, like, you know, just a quick scene where he's, you know, going into somebody's house and making their kid stand in the closet, and then he's like, "What's for dinner?" You know, I mean, so Carrie-Anne Moss plays Jerry Hogarth. This character also really messed up, layered. She's going through a divorce. Well, she's like the biggest hotshot attorney in town.
Which made me think that Matt Murdock would eventually show up on the show just because of that, but he didn't.
Right. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, this character was supposed to be a male before it was changed to a female?
Yes. In the comics, he's not a lawyer. He's the helper of the Rand estate. He's the man that helps Danny Rand,
right,
who
okay.
will become Iron Fist, with his parents' estate, and he controls everything. So it's very okay. different what they did here.
And it's interesting to know, she's still alive, so maybe they'll bring her back, and we'll see that connection. All right,
they have
we
to.
Are at
I mean,
Kilgrave.
Yeah.
Kilgrave, and we'll talk about these other characters some more. But David Tennant is Kilgrave. David Tennant rules. I think very few people would argue that, and of course, I was a fan of him as the Doctor. I had no doubt that he was going to just nail this role. But seeing him in action, just doing it, you know, and being that evil, and just really, like, I mean, he was savoring that role. He was loving every minute of it. I just thought the performance was amazing, and to the point where it's like, I don't know how they're going to top him as a villain. Like, who are they going to get as a villain for season two that's going to, you know, shine in a different way, but as much as David Tennant did as Kilgrave here? Well,
David Tennant, I never imagined I could hate David Tennant, but it's just a testament to how good of an actor he is that he nailed the role. And they changed a lot of it from the source material, because in the comics, Kilgrave never actually rapes Jessica Jones, which I think is something that made the show a lot darker than the comic. You know, making him more realistic, not actually a purple man, but a man who has this ability to control anyone by just talking to them. And they make it seem so real. It's not like in the comics where you go, oh, well, this guy can do that. All right, well, it's a superpower. But this made it seem really horrendous from the first episode on. You think, if this guy could emotionally damage so many people just by talking, how horrible would it be if it existed?
Was he ever revealed as... And so I haven't really... He doesn't show up in the Omnibus quite yet.
Well, he will. He will.
But is his name Kevin Thompson, and is his backstory the same?
His backstory is different.
That I will allow you to tell me that.
His backstory is different, and they changed a lot of it. It's not the comic... It's not a virus. It's pheromones that he secretes from his body. He was initially a Daredevil villain back in the day, like in the really early issues of Daredevil. And I think he's the result of an experiment.
Okay, so that yeah. kind of...
I don't remember that. Don't quote me on that.
They kept it similar enough, but I got to be honest with you right now. The pheromone thing I like a lot better than the virus. Because if you think of the way the viruses work and how close you have to be, even if it's airborne, and how... it just seems like it works so instantly when Kilgrave is ordering people to do things. And oftentimes he can order somebody to do things when he's across the room. So it's like, how does a virus get to that person that quickly and infect them? The pheromone thing seems a little more reasonable. And then I was thinking, they could explain it as like it's the tone of his voice and it hypnotizes people or whatever. And this is a minor, this is just a minor gripe, right? I mean, I don't care so much, but I feel like the virus thing was just a little unbelievable. I mean, I know we're talking about a Marvel show here the absurd stuff that they do. As far as him being purple, they do at one point give him a little bit of purple hue when he overdoses on his father's enhancement serum. But look, Kilgrave, he just... I mean, what are you saying? Like, there's the scene in the police station, which I think is the first really kind of major... it's the first scene where you really get to see his power at work.
Oh, it's horrifying. It's really... I don't know. I was disturbed by pretty much everything he did. Even when they tried to humanize him for a little bit, because there's a chunk of the series where he's trying to do a little bit of good, and you go, oh, maybe he could be great, but he's just a horrendous human being.
Horrendous. You can understand, and the thing is you can really understand, you know, and even if his parents were perfectly reasonable people or nice people, which they seemed generally. I mean, they were like obviously, useless in like dealing with him, but I feel like, you know, him being able to do whatever it is, like, he explains it to Jessica, like, my whole life I've just been able to, like, do whatever I want, and people would do everything I tell them to. And, you know, do you realize how lonely and alienating that is? And, you know, and yeah, you can kind of see that. And you can actually see how, you know, over time, over very small justifications, he could be really evil. But actually, he was evil kind of from the get-go, if you think about it. Well,
he's,
I mean,
he's a man-child. He's just a child that was allowed to do anything he wanted.
Oh, yeah. He never really had to grow up. He never had those kind of, like, you know, challenges that adults have to go through that change them or that make them grow up. So, I mean, you can definitely, you can see how he would be that way. But here's my question. So you have these people with powers. Jessica and Kilgrave both had their powers at a very young age. So what I'm wondering is, and bringing it into the larger Marvel, you know, screenverse, as I like to call it. Mm-hmm. So if they're not mutants and if they're not Inhumans, what are they going to be classified as?
Enhanced humans.
They're enhanced humans, but I weren't. When S.H.I.E.L.D. came up with that term, you know, we're going to find enhanced humans or whatever, they were specifically at that point referring to either Inhumans or, like, you know, like Deathlok, you know, which was a cybernetic creation. But at that point, we still didn't really know anything about, like, people with abilities that weren't either of those things. And so my question is, are they Inhumans? Was Kilgrave an Inhuman? Was Jessica an Inhuman in this? Because she's a mutant in the comics, and obviously they can't be mutants.
Yeah, no, she won't be an Inhuman because it involves the Terrigen Mists happening to make them Inhuman.
Well, I realize that. That's why I know it doesn't match up for them to be Inhuman. So that means that we have this other... Of course, we're calling them enhanced humans. That's the general term.
But America. Captain America is the result of experiments, just like these people are the result of accidents. Is Captain America an Inhuman by that logic? You know, he's an enhanced human. He was human at one point.
Sure. Okay, so they were experimented on.
Well, the Purple Man, yes, I guess, in the TV show.
I know they kind of... I mean, well, obviously Kilgrave was. Right. But Jessica Jones, okay, so let's talk about her backstory a bit, because so she grows up in this family as kind of a token adopted sister to Patsy,
mm-hmm.
who at the time is, you know, a famous child star or whatever. And this is all just a way for the mother to promote her and make money and all that stuff. And she really didn't love Jessica at all. And that became clear early on. And there's some scenes later we get to see, you know, their past lends weight to their relationship, to their friendship, you know, Patsy and Jessica. And I really liked that stuff. That stuff was really well done, and it made you just really bought the solidarity, you know, between them two.
Yeah.
So, in a way, Patsy was also experimented on. Like I said, all of these characters, every single one of them, is really screwed up.
Yeah, every single one of them. And there's no character that's not screwed up on this show. Even the brother-sister that live upstairs from Jessica Jones, they are messed up in their own horrendous way.
Oh my god, can we talk about them for a second? Alright.
I feel uncomfortable talking about them, but I will.
So we have a handful of flaws, and I already talked about one of them. And I don't necessarily want to consider this a flaw, but I will say that these characters were, especially the sister, was really overused to the point of contrivance. Like, later on in the show, she starts becoming all wise and stuff. But we're talking about a character, if you guys have watched the show, this is the sister and brother that lived upstairs, and they just were constantly fighting and annoying Jessica. And then Reuben, I think his name is the brother, falls in love with Jessica, but ends up falling victim to Kilgrave. In a really nasty scene where Jessica has to take care of some more of his trash. And so the sister is just the most annoying character. And I know that she was supposed to be that way. And they really did a good job in making her like, but she was this kind of like, you know, she wasn't just like gripey and annoying in a very typical standard way. She had all these very lofty monologues and speeches. You know, like she's they made her out to be like pretty really intelligent on top of being crazy. But I don't like the way that they use that character later on in the show, because, you know, she was basically like just doing these monologues that seemed really overly scripted. And I wasn't a fan. What do you think, Shepard?
I wasn't a particularly big fan of them, but I thought it added an extra layer to things. You know, things could get really intense if you just have Jessica Jones prancing about trying to find Kilgrave, and you needed some kind of backdrop to how her actions affect everybody else. And you have Malcolm, sure, and you have them. You too. Can do,
yeah, and you can do that with any number of different types of characters. So it sounds to me that you actually rather enjoyed the redheaded stepchild.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she annoyed the hell out of me, but I did see why they were doing it. I felt like these shows have to be a little more grounded in reality than The Avengers. I rewatched Avengers 2 the other day, and I liked it more the second time around, believe it or not. I actually kind of liked it. And I feel like it was so over the top, you didn't have the human aspect of it. Like, what happens after they destroy, Johannesburg? You see it a little bit, but you don't get to see how their actions affect other people.
Sure. No, I mean, I totally get what you're saying, and you're right. I'm just, like, for me personally, I feel like they really played that character a little too hard. But anyway, it's a minor thing. Well, you know, like I said, these are minor gripes. This was really... really tight, tense, and very like unpredictable show. I mean, I think one of the best things that I liked about it is that it shifted around in different ways, and it exposed these characters' flaws in ways that other shows don't do. That other shows romanticize characters. This show kind of went in a different direction. It doesn't romanticize any of the characters really, and it. And so that lends to the grittiness, obviously, and how realistic it is. But it's just really great writing. I mean, one of the main writers on the show is Melissa Rosenberg, and if you recall, she is one of the main. She wrote some of the best episodes of Buffy. So she is a Whedon. She comes from the Whedon school.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes. And there are some other writers on the show, and I think, you know, at least one of the other writers also.
She also wrote Twilight.
Who's that? Melissa Rosenberg?
Yes.
That can't possibly be the same Melissa Rosenberg.
No, it's the exact same one.
The Twilight script?
Yep.
Okay, well, I mean, you win some, you lose some. But I'm going to tell you.
I think for all of them, from what I'm seeing here, no, wait, Breaking Dawn, Parts 1 and 2, and Eclipse. All of them, all four of them, all five of them, Jesus, there's five.
All right, well, sometimes you just got to take a paycheck.
It's true.
But you if there's any evidence you need of the that she can write, it's this show right here.
No, it's fantastic. You know what? One thing one thing that was a big difference from the TV show and the comics, which I think I liked it because obviously they couldn't do it. But one of the beautiful things that Bendis does with Alias, when he finally sets up her origin story, is she is a female Peter Parker, basically. In fact, she has a crush on Peter Parker. She goes to the same high school. She lives in the same neighborhood as Peter Parker. And her parents, yes, they die in the car accident that gives her powers. And she moves in the comics, she moves with two elderly people who take care of her, much like Aunt May and Uncle Ben. So she's got the same guilt for her parents' death as Peter Parker has for the death of Uncle Ben. And I think that made it interesting as a comic book reader, because you're reading it and going like, man, this is how Peter Parker could have gone wrong if he just encountered completely different situations like the Purple Man. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of parallels with a lot of these characters.
But Bendis made it an effort to make it as obvious as possible. You know, going to the same high school as Peter Parker.
Speaking of characters that are kind of parallel, at least in the context of these Netflix shows, the cop And I forgot, and I don't have the name of the actor or the name of the cop, but you know the one. It's the older black cop that...
The one from The Wire. Jesus.
The Wire. Yeah. And, you know, he's a good character in this show. I mean, he's not in it very much, but, you know, he essentially... what I noticed is he's basically like a Ben Ulrich, because he meets pretty much the same kind of a fate as Ben Ulrich does. And so one of my friends actually, he's like, hey, wait a minute, what does Marvel or what does Netflix have against old black dudes that they got to keep killing them off? So hopefully that doesn't continue as a trend.
Let's hope not. Well, yeah. Oh my God, they've killed both the old black dudes.
So that cop seemed like the same kind of a character too, right? Like the grizzled, you know, reluctant yet ultimately good cop dash and or journalist who ends up getting spoilers again, it's Nuke that takes him out in a very one of the many kind of twists and that we don't see coming. So let me just talk real quickly, because we only have like 10 minutes left, some of our favorite moments in the show, and there's so many that involve Kilgrave, you know, whether it's like throw that coffee in your face or whatever, like just the way that he uses his powers and the consistency and the kind of the logistics behind all of that played out really well. And but one of my favorite more clever ones was when they have Kilgrave in the airtight container cell or whatever, he ends up escaping because he made that deal with Hogarth. But before he leaves, Patsy had the gun, and he's able to order her to. He's like, put a bullet in your head, right? She turns the gun on her head, or towards her face, and click, click, click. Luckily, no bullets, right? So later on, Jessica tries, chasing Kilgrave down, and he doesn't make it. So she comes back, and Patsy is still trying to she took an actual bullet. There's a bullet, or either that or a bullet shell, and she's like slamming it against her head and really hard, and trying to put a bullet in her head. And so Jessica Jones, she's like, here, and she takes the bullet and puts it in her mouth. She's like, here, just put it in your mouth, suck on this, it's in your head, you put a bullet in your head, you did what he said, it's over. And then she was able to stop.
That was incredibly, incredibly smart. I remember seeing that and thinking, man, they really thought this show out very, very, very well.
Yeah, it's stuff like that that you see throughout the entire show. And I think that's what really keeps it, interesting and unpredictable. And it really is. I mean, you know, more so than Daredevil by far. It's such a twisty, turny, just roller coaster of really messed up people.
Yeah.
And so but man, Kilgrave, you know, David Tennant, hats off to him. I don't know how they're gonna top him off or you know, have another villain that's as great.
Yeah, it's really hard to develop a villain that well rounded.
Yeah, I mean, or just, you know, and executed, and I mean, David Tennant obviously oozes charisma, so you know, I mean, what a brilliant piece of casting, and it's going to be sad. I mean, I don't know if he's dead, but it seems to me that she snapped his neck pretty good there at the end.
Yeah, it seems like that's pretty well snapped. I don't think that thing's going back into place. That's just my medical opinion, but yeah.
And just to correct something I was saying earlier, Melissa Rosenberg writes a couple of the episodes, but they seem to have, strangely enough, every single episode is written by different people for the most part.
Really?
Which is even crazier if you think about it, because it's like, are you kidding me? Like, all these different people were able to write something that kind of tight and coherent for what it was? That's really impressive.
These people at Marvel, I mean, Jeff Loeb probably can't write a comic I'll ever like, but he does do very good things with this Marvel crew. I mean, he's the brain behind putting all of this together. So hats off to Jeff Loeb.
Yeah, I mean Loeb, and obviously, I mean there's a lot of the same people involved, and Feige probably has his. Oh wait, he doesn't do any of the TV stuff. Never mind, he doesn't. Although I'm sure they consult, You know, everyone consults to try. I mean, they have to, because there's consistency even, I mean, bleeding into. Here's what I'm hoping for, and this is what I hope they.
You're hoping for a Rocket Raccoon and Jessica Jones show, because I would love that. Is that what you want? No.
Well, I mean, what I was gonna say is, you know, by the time we get to the Infinity Wars, and they have to call every single hero to action. I would like to see everyone. I want to see Jessica Jones and Quake becoming friends. Huh? I mean, those two could definitely get along. Holy shit.
They're both very grumpy.
Daisy Johnson, and because they kind of cut from the same cloth a little bit. I mean, if you look how much of an attitude Daisy had when she was Sky, at least in the beginning there. Anyway, what you know what I'm saying? I'm saying anyone who has powers, you know, whether it's the Inhumans or, you know, the Defenders, Doctor Strange, everybody standing together and just get like this group shot, this like Marvel splash page group shot of all the heroes about to clash with whoever Thanos is with. Maybe it's probably just Thanos. Oh, how cool of a poster would that be? Thanos standing there, it's just him, and then this horde of all the heroes that have been introduced in the Marvel Universe. Except for maybe a couple like Daredevil or whoever else can't go into space.
Yeah, I can't imagine Jessica Jones in space. That would be a very interesting episode. Yeah. In space! I don't know. Well, the show, overall, I thought the show was brilliantly done. I hope we did it a little bit of justice when talking about it, but it was... It was very, very deep for a superhero TV show, because it wasn't really a superhero TV show. It was a very human.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically... I mean, there was times in the show where I'm like, Jesus, this is like... This is reaching, like, you know, Requiem for a Dream levels of emotion porn. Actually, at some point, like Lars Van Trier level of, like, we're going to screw over our characters.
It's just missing Bjork singing in the background, and we've got it. We've got it.
Well, I feel like maybe they were just a little bit flippant with some like stuff, and a little bit like not as. I mean, it wasn't completely tidy, but at the same time, it seems like a show like this dealing with so many messed up characters shouldn't be tidy. It should feel like a complete mess by the time it's over, and then you just wait for the next season, and hopefully things get better.
I don't know what they can do for season two, really, because the season was just Jessica dealing with her PTSD. I don't know where they could go from there.
Well, I mean, okay, so I guess that's the good thing to end on here. Do you think that Jessica Jones should just wait until the Defenders are formed to show up again?
I think so. I think she can maybe do a little cameo every now and again, maybe in Luke Cage.
Because the thing is there's a lot of people who love this character, and she does happen to be one of the only female lead superhero characters, and so I feel like there's an audience there that would feel kind of gypped if they didn't get another season of that particular character solo.
Or if not, just like they did with Luke Cage, which I don't think they'll do, but it would be nice, have her be a secondary character on Luke Cage and then just set that up to be Defenders, you know? But have her have as much screen time as Luke Cage had on her show.
Yeah, but then they have to... I was thinking they're probably going to introduce Iron Fist in the Luke Cage show.
Yeah, they probably will. And in Daredevil, they were setting that up very, very clearly. That one episode with Stick, that was all set up for Iron Fist.
And do you think the Punisher is ever going to join the Defenders?
Well,
no. Here's the Punisher is going to be exactly who the Punisher is supposed to be. He's going to be the guy that Captain America wants to punch in the face every time he's around. He's going to be like, "We don't like your methods, Castle."
It would be interesting to see them both together in a room, though, because it always is in the comics.
Oh, dude, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, look, we were talking about how a lot of these heroes can't go into space. Granted, but you're gonna need heroes on Earth to defend Earth, right? As like the second wave, or like if Thanos send a bunch of like his minions or whatever, you know, to mess up Earth, and you've got, you know, a reason for Spider-Man and Daredevil and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Iron Fist and whoever else.
Oh, God, please, yes.
throw throw Spider-Man's in some Shang-Chi, you know, whatever.
Shang-Chi,
and they are doing Moon Knight, so Moon Knight will show up. I mean, just imagine.
Wait, they're doing Moon Knight? This is news to me.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
That's right. Our show ended before we got to discuss that. They did, in fact, they are going to do a Moon Knight.
A psychopathic, schizophrenic Batman with multiple personalities added on top of the schizophrenia?
Well, I mean, we just talked about Jessica Jones, and so it doesn't seem too wacky. And, you know, bring it on, is what I gotta say.
And if they can do anything like what Warren Ellis has been doing, did with the character during his short run, I'm game.
Oh, you know what? Don't give... I actually like what Brian Wood did, and I really like what Brian Wood did.
Actually. Oh, I did too.
I think Colin Bunn surprised me by doing really good with Moon Knight, because I wasn't sure what direction that was going to take, whether it was going to dip in quality, and...
It didn't at all.
No. Colin Bunn really nailed it, and he's you can tell it's him. You can tell it's him. You can tell it's a little bit different, but it's also really respecting the overall tone and execution of the books up to that point. So
I'll say it to this day, Cullen Bunn is one of Marvel's secret weapons. His run on Magneto was probably one of the best comics I've read, superhero comics in ages. And now he's doing Uncanny X-Men, I think, with Magneto, because he writes the character so well. So I'm glad that he's getting his due credit now.
Man, Magneto, still sticking around. You'd think he'd be, like, really old and grizzled now, like Nick Nolte or Gary Busey. Oh, my God, imagine
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey as Magneto.
And Nick Nolte as Professor X. Come here, my X-Men. Oh, I can't do the Nick Nolte voice. I can't do it.
I'm thinking, Gary Busey, like, give me my Amazon TV stick! Anyway, that's all I got for Gary Busey. Thanks for listening to the first episode of the Doc and Shepherd Show, and I hope we addressed enough about Jessica Jones and why it was awesome. I was just excited to talk about this because I really didn't get to talk about it at length with anyone. So hopefully people tune in for some more shows with me and...
Me? Me? Me?
And you.
Me? Me?
Me. Me and you. So all you people that have stuck around and kept subscribed to Mr. TV Face and hoping for something to come out, and thank you. Thank you for sticking around and doing that. And if there's anybody new, also stick around, because we're going to have some fun stuff coming up. A whole bunch of fun stuff on Mr. TV Face. You have no clue. You have no clue. We're talking hip-hop and puppets and comedy and weirdness and just as much as I could possibly vomit onto the internet.
Aww. Sounds good.
So tune in next time to the Doc and Shepherd Show. We'll be here. And we love you.
Be good.
Bye.